The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. And if we have some time later on today's show, we'll get to some of your emails that have been coming in recent days, and also a look at a few statistics, stats from this past weekend's television program here in the UK, and also some stats, if we have time, regarding the radio show, this program here. Well, the Drudge Report has a blaring headline this morning, Brexit on the brink. If you click on the link, however, the Supreme Court did rule over here that Brexit has to go through Parliament, which the government was hoping it would not have to. But it says in the opening paragraph of BBC, the judgment means Theresa May cannot begin talks with the EU until MPs and peers give their backing, although this is expected to happen in time for the government's 31 March deadline. So I suppose anything could happen in the short run. So we'll keep our eye on it, but it seems as though Drudge might be sensationalizing this development somewhat. But we'll see. We'll look at what happens in the weeks ahead. We know what the Bible prophesies. We know that that Britain is going to be on the outside looking in. And as I covered with you yesterday, it's just fascinating to watch this sort of resurgence of the Brotherhood, the United States and Britain, and so much optimism for the future coming from both of these nations, particularly with the election and now inauguration of Donald Trump. I want to pick up where we left off from yesterday, and in doing that, I'll set up the discussion here with something that, again, something that Donald Trump said during his inaugural address on Friday. This is clip number one.
We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first.
Only America first. That's what the president said on Friday. Of course, he had been making statements like that in the lead up to the inauguration, all through the campaign season. And while he was president-elect, quite a few of his aides were kind of tamping that down a little bit, trying to tell world leaders that, look, there's nothing to worry about here. We'll carry on with so many of the same policies as far as our foreign policy is concerned. But then you get to the inauguration speech, and, well, he pretty much put the world on notice, as Charles Krauthammer said in that clip I played for you yesterday. His remarks had leaders in foreign capitals quaking in their boots. And so we're going to be especially watching how this lowering of the boom on foreign capitals, we're going to see how this especially impacts America's relationship with Europe, Germany in particular. In Politico this morning, there was a piece that says Donald Trump leaves Europe in the cold. It says here, Europe was worried about the incoming president's rhetoric. His inaugural speech poured more oil on the fire. U.S. President Donald Trump's message to America's allies, to his allies, in his inaugural address was as unmistakable as it was brutal. Don't count on us. That's the message. Don't count on us anymore. We've been carrying the burden of the Western world for long enough. We're broke. We've got to fix our own problems. We've got to rebuild our infrastructure. One more snippet here from the president's address, clip two.
For many decades, we've enriched foreign industry at the expense of American industry, subsidized the armies of other countries while allowing for the very sad depletion of our military. We've defended other nations' borders while refusing to defend our own. And spent trillions and trillions of dollars overseas while America's infrastructure has fallen into disrepair and decay. We've made other countries rich while the wealth, strength, and confidence of our country has dissipated over the horizon.
That's Donald Trump from his inauguration speech on Friday. And of course, you can understand a lot of that sentiment, especially if you're an American. America has spent trillions since the end of World War II. Look at the amount of money. Look at the power that the United States has devoted to the international community. Trillions. He's right. He's right. But now with America pulling back, we've got to look at how this dramatic shift is shaking the world order. And we've got to look at how this fits in with Bible prophecy. Politico goes on to say here, if Trump's intention was to put Europe on notice, he succeeded. No region has benefited more from U.S. security guarantees since World War II than Europe. I mean, we rebuilt Germany. And we've provided this security guarantee since 1945. And we've pushed for European integration. It says Washington's unconditional commitment to defend the continent expressed in Article 5 of the NATO Treaty allowed Europe to outsource its security to the U.S. And that paved the way for European integration by blunting the national rivalries that had underpinned centuries of conflict. And so Europe had this prolonged period of peace and stability and also prosperity. It says the stability spawned a period of peace and prosperity unique in the continent's history. Along the way, the U.S. also benefited, both from its largely unfettered access to European markets and by leading a community of like-minded liberal democracies, or so Europe thought. And so there were benefits going in both directions. But here again, if you're an American, if you're struggling in the Rust Belt, how can you not understand it and perhaps even agree with the sentiment he expressed on Friday? They're quaking in foreign capitals. But that message is well received in the United States, at least within the Donald Trump supporters, that community. It says even before the speech, those pillars of the Western world order appeared to be cracking. Well, it talks about some of the statements over the last few months. Mr. Trump saying NATO was pretty much obsolete, and him reaching out to Vladimir Putin. And as I say, American officials have tried to downplay some of that in the lead up to the inauguration. But then you get to the inauguration, and what does the new American president say? He says, this is our new decree. This is the decree we're sending out to every city, every foreign capital, in every hall of power. And that is, from now on, it's going to be America first. We're not going to operate the way that we used to. This is different. It says here, yet the inaugural speech raised fresh doubts about the commitment the U.S. has made, and instead of trying to assuage allies' concerns, Trump poured more oil on the fire. Well, I think I read that bit to you earlier. And, well, you can, again, the rest of the article, I won't go through everything, but it says these foreign capitals, especially in Europe, are going to be watching to see what Mr. Trump's first moves are He's, as I said yesterday, he's reached out to the leader of the UK, the prime minister here in Britain. And evidently, Angela Merkel has reached out to him, but there's no response yet as to when those two are going to come together or meet. And so everyone's anxious. And how is he going to reach out to Vladimir Putin? And with Europe looking at Mr. Trump, who's talked a lot about ISIS and the threat of ISIS, and he sees Trump as sort of an ally in going after ISIS. He's also come out strongly against China's move in the South China Sea. And so, of course, leaders in Europe are wondering, what about us? What about the threats facing us? Well, when you think about that one clip I played a few weeks back, the one where Mr. Herbert Armstrong talked about how that one great weakness of the United States is that we're only able to see one enemy at a time. Let me just replay that for you. This is clip number 6 from Herbert Armstrong's old radio program.
It does specifically tell us of one of the phases of World War that we believe is now the next one that we will call World War III. And it is not coming from the power and the source that we seem to suspect. No, we in the United States, my friends, seem to be so stupid we never can tell where our real enemy is until after he strikes. We can only see one enemy at a time, and I want to tell you that the United States has more than one enemy.
That's from Herbert Armstrong's old radio program. And to be sure, I mean, you can say the relationship between the United States and Europe is somewhat strained right now, and just judging by the rhetoric. But on the other hand, the United States just saying, NATO's obsolete, we're going to focus on America first, you guys are responsible for yourselves. I mean, you can look at that another way and say that that's putting a tremendous amount of faith in Germany. You talk about trust. I mean, this is a historic foe of the United States. This is the enemy that the United States battled against in two great wars. But now we can only see the one enemy at a time. ISIS, maybe China's a threat. Russia can be dealt with. Europe, well, there's certainly no threats coming out of Europe. This political piece says, should it become clear that the U.S.'s security guarantee for the continent is no longer unconditional, NATO could collapse. That, in turn, could precipitate the dissolution of the EU and the euro. Until Trump, such discussions would have been unthinkable in Europe. But you see, that's what we've been pointing out on this show. The unthinkable is now thinkable. The unthinkable is now happening. These are the kinds of changes that are happening in the world today, and they're almost becoming routine. They're happening so fast. It says, despite transatlantic tensions about Iraq and the war on terror, few questioned the viability of the alliance. For Europe, the U.S. was like an unmovable rock to which the continent was tethered. But now it's drifting. Now we're drifting apart. And here again, European leaders are going to be watching. Who does Donald Trump meet with first? Maybe Theresa May can talk some sense into him, some are saying. Maybe she can go over there and get him to assure us that NATO is going to remain strong. Well, I just want to take you through some verses here in Ezekiel 23. This is a fascinating passage here. You talk about how these developments are fitting in with Bible prophecy. In Ezekiel 23 here, it talks about Israel's end-time lovers, or Israel's Assyrian lovers, and how that the nations of Israel in these latter days, how that they're going to be the victim of a treacherous double cross. That's what's discussed here in chapter 23. Ezekiel 23:4 says, and the names of them were Aholah the elder and Aholibah her sister, and they were mine, and they bear sons and daughters, and their names, Samaria is Aholibah, and Jerusalem, or Ahola, and then Jerusalem is Aholibah. These two sisters, in other words, Israel's represented by Ahola, and then Judah, the little nation in the Middle East today, is represented by Aholibah. And it says in verse 9, wherefore I have delivered her into the hands of her lovers, into the hand of the Assyrians, upon whom she doted. And so Israel and Judah are prophesied to cozy right up to their historic enemies. You're well familiar with the prophecy in Hosea 5. And verse 13, where it says, when Ephraim and Judah, when they see their sickness and their wound, then they go to Germany or Assyria for help. This whole passage shows how that this relationship between Israel and Assyria, it ends in this double cross. Now, abandoning NATO and leaving Europe to be dominated by a newly militaristic Germany, as I say, that's putting a tremendous level of trust in a historic ally. Sorry, I keep saying ally. I mean foe. I mean enemy. It's a calculated risk, and one that the United States has taken before and paid dearly for. Verse 12 says, she doted upon the Assyrians, her neighbors, captains and rulers, clothed most gorgeously, it says, horsemen riding upon horses, all of them desirable young men. And so Israel's prophesied to foolishly put its trust in the Germans instead of in God. I want to take you back to some of the old literature during the time of Herbert Armstrong's ministry. This is from a booklet called The Modern Romans. It was written back in 1975, or that's when it was published. So this is an old work, over 40 years old. And it says here, today, and the book basically is about the United States going the way of Rome, anciently. The great empire that while at its peak, no one thought Rome would fall. That was unthinkable. It says here, today the United States finds itself supporting, defending, and looking for support from former enemies, while former allies are now enemies or becoming more hostile to the U.S. It says, America, listen to this, this is recent history. America and Britain chose to take a calculated risk when they rearmed Germany in fear of the Soviets. And so we built them up. We saw the one enemy. The enemy, right up until it collapsed in the late 80s, the enemy was the Soviet Union. And so we built up Europe, Western Europe. We built up Germany as a bulwark against Soviet aggression. And that, as it says here, was a calculated risk. Increasingly, Japan and other nations are being asked to share the burden against the communists. Our trust is increasingly placed in allies to defend the borders of the American sphere of influence. Now, with respect to Germany and Europe, of course, you had the United States for decades providing that security guarantee, the nuclear umbrella. It says here, and now our allies are growing uneasy and alarmed about America's show of weakness and over-involvement with her internal problems to the point where they suspect America may not keep up its professed commitments. I mean, this is from 1975. And so many of God's people that turned away from the truth. Someone wrote in, it might even be in the list of emails I have here to be read later. But someone wrote in saying, no matter how many years it took for these prophecies to finally be fulfilled, looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, a lukewarm Christian who maybe in the 1970s or the 1980s or the 1990s just thought, well, you know, my Lord delays his coming. I'm losing interest. And maybe there's something better out there for me in the world. And now it's all happening. It's just a few years later than Mr. Armstrong thought it would happen. This is a quote from 1975. our allies growing uneasy and alarmed by America's show of weakness and over-involvement with her internal problems. Does this sound familiar? It's all that we're hearing about. And this booklet says it's produced by the Worldwide Church of God. It's produced by Herbert Armstrong's church. This booklet asks, is history repeating itself? Could it be possible that in the end our calculated risks will be provoked to take matters into their own hands and to turn out to be Frankenstein monsters? It's astounding, really. I mean, and if you step back, America really is between a rock and a hard place. I'll have to get through some of that history from the Old Testament at another time. But someone passed along to me just an example there in the Old Testament where God said to Israel, look, when you go in and take care of an enemy, you better make sure that they're completely defeated. Otherwise, they're going to rise up and come back. Well, the opposite approach is what was taken after World War II. I mean, Germany was defeated and Japan too, but who's responsible for building them right back up? Like I say, I mean, Mr. Trump has a point. It's a fairly popular sentiment among his followers. All these years of spending hundreds of billions, even trillions of dollars, and building up the armies of others. I just came across this particular clip earlier this morning. This is, again, from a message that Herbert Armstrong gave back in 1977. And listen here to what he says about America and how it's worked to build up its enemies, its lovers, as it says here in this passage in Ezekiel. This is clip 5.
And our lovers today are our allies, and they're bleeding us to death. We're paying them. And they're taking all they can get from us. So some of the scriptures, and I believe it's in Hosea or Amos, say that they have just sapped and drained us of our material wealth that God has blessed us with, and we don't even know it. We don't realize what they've done and how they've done it. We're the biggest. Uncle Sam, I've often thought, should be called Uncle Sap.
That's Herbert Armstrong speaking in 1977. About the benevolence of the United States. Paying them. And those nations taking everything that they've been able to get from Manasseh. Okay, so that's happened. And as I say, Mr. Trump comes on the scene and he's on to something. In that sense, it's true. But what happens when you withdraw? Well, then you look at other prophecies. I mean, it's like it's straight out of Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. It is, in fact, straight out of those passages. Blessings and cursings. Because no matter what course the United States takes, there's a bad outcome awaiting. When we're paying, look at how it's ended here. Look at the position the United States is in. Look at the U.S. economy. Look at the U.S. debt. Look at the problems. Okay, so we stop paying and we leave Germany to go it alone in Europe. What a calculated risk that is. But we're between a rock and a hard place, aren't we? There's no good outcome. So we stick to prophecy. And we tell you what's coming in the hope that some will wake up before it's too late and start turning to God. That's the only way there can be a good outcome here. To start turning to God, to start looking to God. But how many are prepared to do that? So many of God's own people have fallen away from the truth right here when these prophecies are unfolding. Well, there's so many other articles here. Another one from The Spectator about why Germany is so concerned, so worried about this new American administration. They know that for 70 years or so, The United States has not only maintained security, Europe's security, but also America has been the number one supporter of European integration. And so what happens if the U.S. turns and leaves? Well, the EU could fall apart. The euro could go under. Whatever happens, when the dust settles, you can look for a European relaunch for sure. A German-dominated union of just 10. But Germany's concerned, losing its security, losing the assurance of all of this free trade, perhaps. As Richard Palmer brought out on Trumpet Hour last week, I mean, such a huge trade surplus for Germany. And Germany's so much more dependent on trade for its economy than the United States. And so if President Trump puts up any kind of trade barriers, it's going to hurt Germany. And so Germany is panicking. There's lots of problems in Germany. And they are concerned, as that article brings out. Another one here from the Telegraph. This is more broadly speaking about Europe in general. How Donald Trump's war on NATO is forcing European states to rethink their defense policy. And so it talks about all the strong rhetoric from over the past 18 months coming from Donald Trump when he was campaigning. And now he's in office. He's been saying all this time that NATO members need to be spending more money on defense. And really, that's already happening. But there's still, there's still problems when it comes to defense spending in Europe, as this article brings out. For one, you've got all these different nations spending on their own defense. You know, the prophesied mixture of iron and clay. And there's a lot of duplication, as this article brings out. It says that Europe has 37 different types of armored personnel carriers, 37 different kinds, all these different nations, all these different types of aircraft. And so somehow or another, the EU needs to find a way to reduce duplication. In other words, to have the leadership to bring this military union together to where they're of one mind. They're still wrestling with some of these struggles, some of these difficulties. The article goes on and talks about how that there's a second problem with these European nations desiring to have the latest, greatest, but then their smaller budgets can't afford to have much of it. And so, you know, again, it needs some coordination. It needs a strong man to preside over the formation of this European military. Well, that's coming. It says the chances of overcoming these problems at the moment appear small, but with Trump about to take office and a cloud of uncertainty hanging over the future of NATO, Europe might just have to change the way it spends on defense, whether it likes it or not. And so for all of those years, we were paying, the United States, we were paying and paying and paying and paying. We were providing the security, the assurances, the protection. And now you look at what this particular administration is saying and doing. He sent out a new decree on Friday to every capital, every national capital, to the halls of every government on earth, and said that from now on, it's America first. It's America first. Only America first. And so Europe is left to itself, dominated by Germany. That's been its national character. Ezekiel 23:16, it says, "And as soon as she saw them with her eyes, she doted upon them and sent messengers unto them into Chaldea. And the Babylonians came to her into the bed of love, and they defiled her with their whoredom. and she was polluted with them, and her mind was alienated from them. The Babylonians in this end time, that's talking about the Holy Roman Empire, the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, 10 nations or national groups in this union. I mean, it's already there as a trading bloc. It's already there as an economic union, a political union. It's going to be relaunched in some form or fashion. But it just needs the military union. And then all these prophecies unfold. Verse 36, further on in this chapter, the Lord said moreover unto me, Son of man, will you judge Ahola and Aholibah? Yes, declare unto them their abominations. Cry aloud, in other words. Spare not. Tell my people their sins. Show them the abominations. Show them what's coming. Tell them about these prophecies. Tell them about the double cross. Tell them they're making a calculated risk. Tell them, show them how dangerous this is. We better be out there declaring this. There's certainly no other organization on earth that's doing it. Going back to some of that old literature, this is The Plain Truth, 1984, October 1984. America's 39-year-long presence in Europe has been the key to Europe's unprecedented peace and prosperity. America was there, making sure they were safe, making sure they could prosper, paying them and paying them and paying them. It says, during this time of pacification, Europe's traditional adversaries, France and Germany, have learned to cooperate to an unprecedented degree. This is from 1984, The Plain Truth, Herbert Armstrong's flagship magazine. It says, and while possessing sizable military establishments, they have not had to be concerned about their ultimate security provided by the U.S. nuclear umbrella and the tripwire presence of U.S. forces in Europe. But as it says here, remove these forces, and the nations of continental Europe will have little choice but to, as quickly as possible, develop their own replacement force. And notice this. This is The Plain Truth, October 1984. It says this time they have no choice but to quickly develop their own replacement force. And it says this time they will likely cooperate with each other, but not necessarily with the United States nor with Great Britain. This is long before Donald Trump ever came along. This is decades before Brexit happened. I mean, this was written even before the reunification of Germany. This was in 1984. Talking about a time when the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire would emerge, and the U.S. would leave, and Europe would have to quickly assemble its own military force, its own replacement force, and that they'd do it. They'd likely cooperate with each other, but not necessarily with the United States or Britain. It said further, the British are known to be edgy about all this talk on both sides of the Atlantic of America packing up, departing Europe, and leaving a united European defense behind in its wake. Yes, Britain's a little edgy when it comes to that, because to this point, America has also been Britain's military security. America has been Britain's security umbrella. It says, where would such a development leave Britain, a nation whose ties to the continent are tenuous at best? Where would it leave Britain, this kind of an arrangement, with America departing? The ties are tenuous. Well, since that time, Germany has reunited, as has Europe. Britain's now on the outside. Donald Trump now heads up the United States. And he's talking about NATO as being obsolete. And he's telling Europe, he's put Europe on notice. From now on, this is the new decree. From now on, it's only America first. Well, as that quote from 1984 goes on to say, and this is something we're really going to have to keep our eyes on in the weeks and months ahead, because it says here, even the military and security factors will not suffice to cement a new Europe together. The greatest glue is religion. The greatest glue is religion. And it says here, the activities of the Vatican in promoting European unity must not be overlooked. And so we can look for the Vatican to become much more involved here in a European theater without America as the dominant military power. In a European theater with so many threats facing the continent from Russia, from ISIS, and elsewhere. Mr. Armstrong, of course, talked about this particular influence as well, the good offices of the Vatican, as he said it. This is clip 3 from his old television program.
Now, a united Europe will bring about a power, a superpower, because the nations of Europe want to unite. They just don't know how to do it. And it's possible that the now present Pope may, or a future one, however it may be, extend his good offices to help them bring about what they would like to have in Europe. Not only economical cooperation, but an absolute political union with a common currency and a common military force. There is a great deal of nuclear power and weapons over there belonging to the United States, but which they could easily just take over. And they could become a stronger power than either the United States or Russia. And now within 2 decades, there's the promise that China may be greater than any of them. And one in competition against the others. That is the future that you can look forward to, and that is the world that you are living in now.
Indeed, it is the world we're living in. All of these great nations opposing one another, competing with each other, competition against the others. And out from Europe, this political union, which is already there, the common currency already there, it just needs the common military force and the assistance coming from a great universal religion. But going back to what the plain truth said in 1984, I mean, once the U.S. forces are gone for the most part, I mean, then they're going to move quickly as possible to develop their own replacement force. And so that then takes you to so many of those other clips and quotes from Herbert Armstrong. You can see or read many of them, and he was right, where he talked about just how sudden it springs upon us, and how that when it does, the whole world is going to be astounded. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us this week. You can send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South.
What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Carolyn Glick had a great column or piece just today, I believe, on the unlearned lessons from the Holocaust. And in this piece, basically, she's talking about how the nationalist uprising in Germany, how it's very different from what we've witnessed in the United States. She says there's a tendency to just sort of lump them all in together, that it's nationalism, it's populism, and that they're all the same. And she said they're not all the same. The one in Germany is quite a lot different, in fact. And she takes us back through the events of this past week. We've talked about them right here on this program. That speech by Bjorn Höcke last Tuesday, a week ago, where he was attacking the fact that Germany had a Holocaust memorial in Berlin. It's a memorial of shame, the way he sees it. It's a memorial that showcases our defeat, the way he sees it. You had his speech, which was well-received, at least by that crowd that was there with him in Dresden. And then the gathering of these far-right leaders over the weekend, on Saturday. And Glick says here that, well, she's talking about the alternative for Deutschland phenomenon, how that it now has a 10 or 15% show of support from German voters. And then listen to this. She says the AfD's rise has been sudden. Going back to what Mr. Armstrong said, the world's going to be astounded at just how sudden the emergence of this seventh and final resurrection is. The AfD, she says, was formed in 2013. Can you believe that? It's like 3-4 years old. That's it, this party. In that short amount of time, it's, as she says, siphoned off voters from nearly every party in Germany. And then she goes through the stats. 2014, 7%. 2015, there was 15% here. 2015, there was 20% that came from one of the states in Germany. I think that was Merkel's home state. She says here, like its European counterparts, whose leaders shared a stage at Koblenz with Petri on Saturday, she's talking about that meeting on Saturday, AfD's steady empowerment is based in large part on its stalwart opposition to Islamic integration. And then also they've come out strongly against political correctness and the problems with multiculturalism and so on. She says here, AfD's barely disguised xenophobia and Nazi sympathies make its empowerment disconcerting, to say the least. It barely disguises it. It also points to the fact that not all far-right parties are the same. And then she goes and compares them to what's happening in France with Le Pen and in the Netherlands with Wilders. In Germany, though, the situation's different. There are many causes for the absence of a nationalist party in Germany that is bereft of Nazi sympathies. There's many reasons for this. Two of them are particularly worth noting. And the first one is that when Germany had legitimate problems, you know, real problems with immigration, Angela Merkel's government and German authorities tried to turn a blind eye to it or to pretend that they weren't really happening. Or even worse, to go after those who would complain about the problems with immigration. For instance, as Judith Bergman reported last week at the Gatestone Institution website, in July 2016, 30 people had their homes raided by German police for publishing anti-immigration posts online. And as Glick brings out in her piece here, that's only added fuel to the fire. because it's just generated more support for AFD, as Germans have seen people like this who just denounce what's happening verbally. They're the ones that are coming under attack. She talks about the cover-up with all those rapes back on New Year's Day a year ago, starting in Cologne, but it spread elsewhere. And then Mrs. Merkel in 2015 coming on strong against the Facebook CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, for not getting rid of the anti-immigration post on Facebook. I mean, it was clear where the government stood. The door was wide open for the immigrants, and that's the policy that she's stayed with. Now, finally, she's coming around to question some of Germany's immigration policies, but it's too little too late. Glick says if Merkel spent more time listening to her constituents and less time rejecting their right to their entirely rational opinions, the AfD would probably not be so powerful today. Well, then she gets to the second reason. She highlights two reasons, remember. Two reasons explaining this phenomenal rise in popularity for a party that's only been around for 3 or 4 years. And this second reason here, this is really an important point. She says, this leads us to the second reason for the resonance of Nazi messaging in Germany and beyond. In 1945, the Nazis were defeated and Nazism was outlawed in Germany and throughout Europe. But whereas the peoples of Europe were prohibited from denying the fact of the Holocaust, they were never required to conduct a true moral reckoning with what happened. Criminalizing Holocaust denial and outlawing Nazi parties, while reasonable on their own terms, mistook the symptoms of Nazism with the cause of Nazism. What's the cause? It says Europeans have been schooled to view the Nazi period as a unique phenomenon, unrelated to anything that happened either before 1933 or after 1945. But the opposite is true. Adolf Hitler and the Nazis and their collaborators throughout Europe didn't spring from nothing. They were the natural outcome of centuries of European anti-Semitism. Their genocidal obsession with the Jewish people was a natural progression of a hatred that predated Christianity and was an integral part of Europe's development through the ages. She says here, the way to block the Nazis from rising on the right is to correct both Merkel's mistake and the larger mistake of the leaders of Europe since 1945. That's important history that she brings out here, saying that, well, Merkel and her policies are empowering these far-right forces. But then also Germany, basically she's saying Germany really hasn't learned the lesson from history. It says, finally, more generally, Europe itself facilitates the rise of anti-Semitism as a political force on the right and left by conflating European rejection of Jews with more general and less meaningful problem, the more general and less meaningful problem of racism. You don't fight hatred of Jews by pretending away its significance and its roots that go back as far as European civilization itself. You don't block the resurgence of Nazism by pretending that European anti-Semitism was born the day Adolf Hitler came to power. There's a tendency to believe that all nationalist movements are alike, but this is not true. Each nationalist movement is a reflection of the specific nation it represents. That's right. Each nationalist movement reflects the nation it represents. And so when you have the Trump supporters and Steve Bannon, the advisor, and Kushner and whoever else saying this is great, these uprisings are great, nationalism's on the rise. Well, what's it going to be like in Germany? As she brings out in this powerful piece, it's very different. Nationalism in Germany is very different than it is in other nations. When we come back, we'll roll through a few stats to conclude the day's show. And also, depending on how much time we have left, hopefully get through a few emails coming from you, the dear listener. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week, condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com, sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
This past weekend on television here in the UK, we had a new program, Is This the Year Things Spiral Out of Control? That's the show where we had the six-minute montage there at the start, one that we also used at the end of last year here on radio. On TV, we advertised the Ezekiel booklet, Ezekiel the End Time Prophet. It brought in 155 requests for the booklet, which is right around the average, I guess, that we had for last year. So a solid program, and with the trickle-in effect, it'll probably move up above 160, 165 before this week is said and done. Sam's passed along a few stats from the radio shows last year, some of the top-performing programs, at least judging by SoundCloud. We don't have all the stats together, SoundCloud together with iTunes podcasts and the number of live listeners and TuneIn, those kinds of apps. But on SoundCloud, these were the best performers. Take Yourself to the Challenge, that's from way back in February the 12th. Which was far and away the leading program, 6,574 plays. And then the second most listened to SoundCloud podcast was Britain on the Way Out. Who could have possibly predicted this 60 years ago? That received 2,700, a little over 2,700 listens. And that, of course, was following the Brexit vote on June 23rd. Third behind that one is EU Army on the Way. More than 2,100 people listened to that one last year on SoundCloud. And then this one here from July 22nd about Donald Trump. Nobody, it's quoting him, nobody knows the system better than me, which is why I alone can fix it. That had a little over 2,000. And this one here, the last one, the fifth on the list, September the 8th, brace yourself for earth-shaking events in Europe. That brought in just under 2,000. Yesterday's, by the way, I think it's up over 850 or 60 right now, which is a pretty strong showing for the first 12 or 13 hours that show has been on SoundCloud. That's Donald Trump and the Jeroboam End. If you haven't listened to that show yet, you can do so on the trumpet.com website or at kpcg.fm. A few emails. This one here coming in response to the show we put together Friday on Inauguration Day. It says, the problem with much of the ceremonies are that they are just that, ceremonial and nothing more, a form of godliness. Actions speak louder than recitations. Another one here in response to that same show, it says, as the Bible is still used for swearing upon in this sinful nation, it has also become a book this nation curses. Not just as it is held in disregard, but regarded with outright contempt, even in the schools of higher learning of this nation. And where this Bible is even accepted, much of its content is rejected as tongues show much love for it, while selective hands snip out certain words. This one here from one of our lady listeners in response again to that show Friday. I look forward to hearing you weigh in on that very uninspiring inaugural speech by the new president of the United States. Uninspiring, but pretty important, given some of the things that he said, as I covered on today's show, the new decree in particular. Another one here in response to Friday's program. I've shared today's show with seven friends, and so pray that they will have ears to hear Also, just wanted to mention how beautiful, beautiful that music was at the break. That was the show we played, If My People Will Pray, based on that passage in 2 Chronicles 7. She says here, thank you also, thank you so very much, praying strong prayers for all God's workers, and that we stay faithful and work with all our hearts. Another one here, also in response to Friday's show, it says, thanks for the program today. Your program is poised to be a beacon of light in this new age of Jeroboam. The one thing that I found interesting in the inauguration was the prayer where the minister was reading some of the Beatitudes. They're the words of Christ himself to the church, and they are very alive and relevant at this time in history. Thanks for shedding light at this otherwise dark and decaying time. Another one here says, I listened to your program on Friday, eye-opening, very interesting, and absolutely prophetic. There's a sense of foreboding that's been hovering over us with this election and its aftermath. I'm deeply saddened at the state of our nation. Thank you for the clear prophecies of God's word. Truly, God is moving quickly through you and your staff to warn everyone of what's happening and what will happen. Keep up the great work. Well, that's just a sampling. I've got quite a few more here. Hopefully, I can get to some others on tomorrow's show. But that's all that we have time for today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Send us an email, would you? TD@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.